She came from Providence, one in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea.
Hello and welcome to today's survival show. My name is Bob Main. I'm your host, where we help you tap into the power of choice and creating options in your life to live a more secure life and to strengthen your resolve. And Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 56 of today's survival show. And if you're listening for the first time, I'm honored. Welcome to our show. This is a practical-based show. We don't get into a lot of extremism, no conspiracy theories and paranoia and stuff like that. We just talk about common sense, how to live a more secure life, kind of get prepared for things that might come our way. And even if nothing bad comes your way, you're probably going to benefit from what you do anyway. That's pretty much the premise. And in this episode, I want to talk about what's called Disneyland Activism. I didn't make that title up. That title comes from an audio clip that I'm going to play for you towards the end of this show. There's somebody that I want you to hear from. And she calls it Disneyland Activism. But I think it kind of summarizes pretty easily what we really have in this country, and I mean the United States. I know I have a lot of international listeners who listen to this show. And that number's growing, by the way. So thank you from those of you outside of the U.S. for tuning in. You might have a Disneyland activism system in your country, too. And when I get done with this podcast, and you get done listening to the guest that I have, I think you're probably going to agree that in most cases, if you want to be an activist, if you want to make a point about something, if you want to peacefully protest, you're pretty much going to be engaging in Disneyland-type activities. What do I mean by that? At Disneyland, things aren't real. And our country here in the United States, we create the illusion that you can be an activist. But unfortunately, it seems like it's a shell game. It's not really, they're not really listening to you. And I know that recently, you know, I started the Survival Activist Club because I really felt that we could make a difference. And I really believe that. Don't take me the wrong way. I'm not trying to abandon the SAC Club, Survival Activists Club. And for those of you who participated, let's keep doing it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to run another contest because the more numbers we can gather to speak out. And as I mentioned, folks, I don't care what your position is on something. It doesn't matter if you're conservative, liberal, independent, somewhere in between, libertarian, whatever. It doesn't matter. All opinions are welcome in this show. The more power you have, the more numbers you have, the more power you have is what I'm trying to say. So let's keep on being activists. But let's also examine the question of what rights do we really have? I want to start this show by asking that question. What rights do we really have? Do people have a right to medical treatment, regardless of whether or not they can pay for it? Think about that. Do people have the right to food or the right to decent housing, whether or not they can pay for it? Would the United States Supreme Court decide that these rights are the same type of rights that are enumerated to us in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution? The only way I can think of to answer those questions and kind of give you a common sense answer, is to first of all decide what is a right. Let me try to attempt to answer that. The way our Constitution's framers used the term right was they said that a right is something that exists simultaneously among people and exists so as not to be at the expense of another person who is unwilling. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Let's talk about the right to free speech. All right, a very commonly known right. It's something that we all simultaneously possess. And my right to free speech does not impose any obligation upon another person. So unless I'm interfering with your right to free speech or your right to free expression, it's okay, as long as I'm not imposing on you. It's kind of like with this podcast. Okay, it's my right to say what I want, and as long as I don't infringe upon your right, and I'm not infringing upon your rights by saying what I want on this show, because you certainly don't have to listen to this podcast, and you can just turn this show off anytime you want. You don't ever have to download another episode again for as long as you live. I mean, it's not imposing on your right. So that's okay. In other words, me exercising my right to free speech requires absolutely nothing from you. And it in no way diminishes any of your rights. Okay? That's what the framers of the Constitution meant, and that's what I'm trying to say. Now, let's look at a contrasting view to what I just said. Take, for instance, the so-called rights that the government says that we have to health care, to medical care, or the so-called right to food or decent housing. And, you know, some people think that we have those rights whether we can pay for those or not. Whether we can afford them or not, we have those rights. That's a common belief today. All right, those are not rights in the same sense that my free speech is a right. Here's what I mean. If it's said that a person has the right to medical care, food, and housing, and has no means of paying for it, then let me ask you a question. How does that person enjoy those rights? I can tell you, it's not from Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking. You might be thinking, well, Congress provides for those types of rights. No, not quite. That's not the way it works in this country. It's not the way it was supposed to work. Unfortunately, it's not what the founding fathers meant, but unfortunately, that's what people think. They think Congress can infer rights upon people. No, Congress does not have any resources of its own. All it takes is for you to just briefly spend about 5 minutes, and all you got to do is pretty much read the preamble of the Constitution and read a few of the articles and a few of the amendments, and you're going to be able to see that that's pretty evident, that Congress doesn't really have any of its own resources to grant a right to you. The only way Congress can give any one American any certain right or any certain thing is to first, through the use of intimidation and threats and coercion, take it from somebody else. All right? Let me repeat that. The only way Congress can give any American anything is to first, oftentimes with intimidation, threats, and coercion, take it from another person. And so the so-called rights that people think we have to medical care and food and housing impose an obligation on some other American, and they usually do it through the tax code, that other American must be denied his or her right to their earnings. That's the only way they can pull that off. So in other words, when Congress gives one American a right to do something he didn't earn, it takes away the right of another American to do something he did earn. And that, my friends, I think is just flat out wrong. And if you take this bogus concept of rights and you apply that to the free speech example I used earlier in the podcast, it would go like this. My free speech right would impose on the financial obligations of others. Other people would be required to provide me with the website I use, provide me with the hosting service that I use, the recording device that I use, and the fees to run this podcast. You would have to pay for it if you use the same concept that a lot of our people in our government use today. All right? Here, let me give you another example. Let's take, for instance, my right to travel. Okay? My right to travel as I see fit, under the same premise that a lot of people in our government have, it would require that the government take the earnings of other hard-working people, such as maybe some of you who listen to this show, to provide me with my airplane tickets and my hotel rooms. That would be wrong. Okay, so this bogus concept of rights that people think that other folks should have at the expense of others is just completely wrong. And, you know, there was a philosopher named John Locke. And he had a vision of natural law that pretty much guided the founders of our nation when they wrote the Constitution. And also when they wrote the Declaration of Independence. And you can find some of John Locke's philosophies in the Declaration of Independence. Basically, where it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's basically John Locke's vision. Now, make no mistake about something that I'm saying, because I really don't, you know, I've had some comments sent to me recently, some people emailed me, and they're really taking completely out of context some of the things that I've been saying on my shows recently. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a political show. I want you to understand something. I'm not trying to make a political statement by this show. I swear to you, all political opinions are completely welcome on this show and in this whole suite of products that I offer. And when I say suite of products, what I'm talking about is the blog, the podcast, the forum, and the chat room. Okay, those are the four pieces that today's survival show offers you. It doesn't matter what your beliefs are, you are welcome. And we will never chastise you, we'll never make fun of you, no matter what your beliefs hold. I want you to completely understand that. And if somebody on the forum is beating you up just because of some way that you believe that you have the right to believe, let me know about that. I will police that kind of stuff, and I'll police it heavily. So make no mistake about what I'm about to say right now. I believe that government is necessary. Some government is necessary. But the only rights that we can delegate to governments, to our government, are the ones that we actually possess. And it's our duty, and it's our right, and it's our obligation to give to government what rights we want to give to them. That's the way that the process was supposed to work, not the other way around. Government's not supposed to be the one to decide what kind of rights that we are to get. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want any numbskulls in the government, no matter who they are and what party they're from, telling me what rights I have and what I don't. Let me give you an example on that. We all have a natural right to defend ourselves against predators, for example, and against people who want to harm us. And since we possess that right, we can delegate authority to the government to defend us. Now, I wouldn't necessarily completely rely on that if I were you. The authorities from the government can't be everywhere at all time to defend you, but we have the right to delegate that to them to take care of us, to defend us. But, as you've heard me mention many, many times on this show, I urge you to take every step necessary you can legally take to be able to defend yourself, because you have that God-given right. Now, in contrast to what I'm saying, we don't have a natural right to take the property of another person and give it to somebody else. Okay? We can't take property from one person and give it to another. We don't have the right to do that. And so therefore, because we don't have the right to steal something from somebody else, we cannot legitimately delegate that right and that authority to the government. All right? We cannot delegate the authority to the government to take what belongs to one person and give it to another. Did you know that somewhere around 3/5 to 2/3 of our federal budget consists of taking property from one American and giving it to another? Now, if a private person were to do that same exact thing, what would you call it? Stealing, right? But when government does that, we just kind of calmly call it income redistribution or some flowery term like that. But that's exactly what thieves do. Thieves redistribute income. They take it from you and they give it to themselves. That's redistribution, isn't it? And income redistribution not only betrays the founders' vision for our country, but it's also a sin in the eyes of God. Again, it's not a religious show. You can believe whatever you want in terms of religion. That is your right. But I'm guessing that when God gave Moses the eighth commandment being, thou shalt not steal, I don't think that he meant, thou shalt not steal unless there's a majority vote in Congress authorizing it to do so. Okay, I don't think that's what he really had in mind. I don't think he had that exception on there that it was okay as long as there's 60 votes in the Senate, they have the right to go ahead and steal. I don't really think that's pretty much how he set this up. Do you? And here's the real problem. The real problem for our country and many other countries like ours is that any politician who holds the same values of liberty that I've talked about and that our founding fathers held, that person would get soundly defeated in today's political atmosphere if they ran for office. And that, my friends, I think is a real shame. So by now I might have you thinking, well, I got to protest against this. This just isn't right. That's why you've seen the Tea Party movement really start to take off. Well, if you're feeling that way, and you might say, well, what should I do, Bob? You just got done saying we have Disneyland-type make-believe activism in this country. Well, you know, you're right, but there's power in numbers. Remember that. There's power in numbers. Eventually, if you overwhelm them with numbers, you're going to get your point across. And so that pretty much leads me to the audio clip I want to play. Have you ever heard of Naomi Wolf? Now, for some of you who are conservative-minded people, if I say the name Naomi Wolf, it might make you bristle a little bit. All right, she's pretty much a leftist. All right, but like I said, all political opinions are welcome on this show. And this clip that I want to play by Naomi Wolf, I wouldn't play it if I didn't think that it was applicable. Okay, Naomi Wolf is the author of 7 different books, including some of the New York Times bestsellers, and I'm taking this right off of her website. Okay, some of her books are The Beauty Myth, The End of America, and Give Me Liberty. She's toured the world, speaking to audiences, of all walks of life about gender equality, social justice, and most recently, the defense of liberty in America and internationally. Naomi Wolf is the co-founder, of the Woodhull Institute for Ethical Leadership, which teaches ethics and empowerment to young women leaders. And she's also a co-founder of the American Freedom Campaign, a grassroots democracy movement in the United States, whose mission is the defense of the Constitution and the rule of law. So that's a brief introduction to Naomi Wolf. Now, again, folks, you know what? Even if you don't agree with this lady politically, don't let the messenger cloud the message. She's got a very, very good message here. It takes about 5 minutes to listen to this. And she's right on. And again, it doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. This lady has nailed it. She's nailed what it's like to be able to try to protest and affect change in this country. And she's nailed the concept of how many layers of bureaucracy and how many rights that our government is infringing upon us just because we want to peacefully protest. We have that right given to us as well. And the government tends to trample on that. So go ahead and listen to this 5-minute audio clip. Again, don't let the messenger cloud the message. And for those of you who agree with people like Naomi Wolf, you know, I can't say that I'm in lockstep with her on her political beliefs. But when I listened to this, I said to myself, you know what? This lady is correct. So here you go. Here's Naomi Wolf. You might want to turn the volume up just a little bit.
Fora TV. The world is thinking.
I really thought about this a lot because I grew up in the Haight-Ashbury and I'm the child of hippies. And so my formative memories were of very moving, powerful protests that I knew were changing things, not just politically, but also kind of spiritually in a way, like people were being changed and society was being changed. So I did some research to find out, and instinctively, I mean, the marches I've been on lately, for the last decade, they really are, that you do feel impotent. You feel like you're engaging in some kind of weird Disneyland activism. You know, like there's going to be kind of Mickey Mouse and Snow White with a banner, you know, at the front of me. It's like totally fake somehow. Why is that? So I did some research and I discovered, and many of you are lawyers, you'll appreciate this, that actually there's been, it feels fake because it is fake now. I discovered that for 30 years there's been a systematic effort on the part of those who benefit from a small group of people holding power, a systematic effort to kill off effective protest by a death by a thousand cuts of bureaucracy, over permitticization in jurisdiction after jurisdiction. So what do I mean by this? Is it okay if I feel like I can't see the people in the back? I'm just going to sit up a little. I looked at places where protest made a difference. Actually, I took one step back. In trying to answer the question, how do you save a nation from being closed by an oligarchy that wants to close a democracy? I looked at other times and places where citizens effectively pushed back against would-be dictators. And one thing that came up again and again and again is mass protest. Not only did it come up, but mass protest always works. Always works. I mean, unless the leaders are willing to literally send out the military with submachine guns and mow people down, mass protests like the kind you saw in Pakistan, the kind you saw with People Power in the Philippines, the kind you saw all over the Baltic states, Estonia, when they were bringing down the Soviet Union, the kind you saw in East Germany, always works. The civil rights movement, mass protest. Okay, so what kind of mass protest? The kind of mass protest that always works is illegal just about everywhere in the United States today. Why is that? For a protest to be effective, you have to stop traffic. You have to stop traffic. What keeps you from getting a permit in the United States? Stepping a foot into the street. Now, why do you have to stop traffic? Because for a protest to do anything, it has to disrupt business as usual. I don't mean violence. Whoever's tape recording this, to take it back to, you know, Quantico or whatever, I don't mean violence. I mean dissent. You know, Martin Luther King, who wrote Letter from Birmingham Jail because he marched without a permit, said sometimes it is important for the tension to rise up, for people to see that all is not well, and that you do that by stopping traffic. That's how citizens indicate, you know, business as usual is not acceptable. And by the way, the founders did this all the time, up and down the Eastern Seaboard in the 1760s, 1770s, 1780s, mass protests of ordinary citizens who didn't like the British crown, and they dismantled the, you know, tax collectors' mansions brick by brick till there was not a brick standing. Or, you know, then they had their nation and they didn't like what, you know, President Washington was doing with foreign policy, so they had mass protests that brought everything to a halt, in city after city. This is the American mandate. Okay, so now we cannot do it, because if you are going to do that, you can't get a permit. And even so, there's this crazy section in Give Me Liberty where I try to use all my liberties as the founders intended, and I found out that it's illegal to stage a rally for the Constitution in Union Square. Without a permit, it's illegal, even with a permit, to use a megaphone. You know, meanwhile, commercial music is blasting out in Union Square, and I try to think about, you know, registering my neighbors to vote, and I realize I'm risking $5,000. You know, it's illegal to make a mistake, an innocent mistake. And, you know, that you can't, you know, oh my God, if you try to get a friend to run for Senate in Virginia, you know, you go two clicks in and then you realize you need to hire a lawyer because you could be breaking the law if you have a bake sale, you know, and you need a bake sale to get the money to hire the lawyer. Mm-hmm. And I realize, and of course, that last one is important because campaign finance reform necessitated, but apart from that, barrier after barrier after barrier has been deliberately set in the place of citizens to keep them from leading the nation. And so back to protest, there's this systematic neutering of our marches. So yes, you can get a permit to go from here on the mall to here on the mall. That changes, pardon me, fuck all. It changes nothing. And it will never change anything. And whether the media covers it or not, it will never change anything.
Okay, and now you know where I got the term Disneyland activism, don't you? So, this was a short message and a short show today, but I hope that it made you think. I hope it made you think. You know, don't give up trying to protest and affect change. And yeah, we do have to stop traffic, folks. If you want to get people's attention, you got to stop traffic. Now, I'm probably going to end up on some watch list somewhere after this podcast, right? You know, they're going to say, "Oh, this guy is preaching a message of being belligerent." No, I'm not preaching a message of being belligerent on this show. All right, I want to put that out there because I'm sure enough, somebody's going to beat me over the head with that. So realize, as I've said before in other shows, if you're not taking action and doing your part, then I really don't think that you're doing everything necessary that you can to live a secure life. So as I bring this show to a close, I want to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I hope that you're benefiting something from these shows. And I hope that I get you thinking about what you have to do to live a more secure life. And if you haven't noticed something about today's survival show, my website and this podcast and everything and the forum and all that, it's not peppered with a lot of advertisements, okay? You don't see a whole lot of advertisers. I've had a few modest sponsors that have done a good job, by the way, but I don't spend a whole lot of time being commercial. This is not something that I do full-time to make an income. It's not something I intend to do full-time to make an income. This show survives on the support of you, the listener, donations from you, the listener. That's it. Again, I'm not going to be, you know, peppering you and badgering you with tons and tons of advertisements. So if you feel like you'd like to support this show, a kind donation, even if it's a small amount, is very much appreciated. That's how I keep this thing going. That's how I keep the four products going. The website, the podcast, the forum, and the chat room. So there's a donate button on the front page at www.todayssurvival.com. And with that, I'm going to bring the show to a close. This is Bob Main, and you've just listened to another episode of Today's Survival Show. And my goal is to help you tap into the power of choice, create options for yourself, so that you can do like Teddy Roosevelt says, do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Our goal is to make survival simple, not extreme. Thanks for tuning in, folks, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Just as her father came across the sea.